welcome to the Bunch UK podcast. You're greeted here by Davey, myself, Tony.
Hello.
Alan.
Hello.
And Simon.
Hello. So, why am I here?
Good question.
Well, about a year ago, or thereabouts, well, actually probably longer ago than that, on the Ubuntu UK Loco Team mailing list, we've talked about having a podcast in the past, and we've had a number of aborted attempts at making one.
And now we're having another one.
Which might actually result in some content. So we've got everything in place. An email address.
Yep.
And four microphones.
And a website.
Yeah, I think that's enough, isn't
it? Good to go, yeah. So, Alan, you are involved in the Ubuntu UK community.
Yes.
And Davey, you are?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, Simon?
Yeah.
On the periphery.
Yeah.
Tony, you're not, are you?
No, I have helped out with the Ubuntu UK stand at the Linux Expo.
Oh, you did? Yeah, that was good fun.
Yeah. And I'm an Ubuntu user. I'm quite happy to contribute to the discussion as well.
Excellent.
So, what is this podcast going to bring us today?
Brainstorm, what that's all about.
FOSDEM, of course.
Yeah, we've got a big package on FOSDEM coming up.
Swindon's Ubuntu Demo Day in April.
And
contributions from
you lot. Yeah, we're going to ask
you
for contributions as well.
Sounds like a fun packed show.
Now, Alan, you're involved in the Brainstorm project. Now, what is it, for a start?
It's a website, brainstorm.ubuntu.com.
Okay.
It was set up by some guys who work in the testing team for Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. And it's been live for, a couple of weeks now, if that. And it's modelled on some of the other Idea Pool and Idea Storm websites that other companies have had. I know Dell have had an Idea Storm site. I think Lenovo have had a kind of more of a blog to kind of gather information from people, from the public about various topics.
Okay. So this is for Ubuntu ideas?
Well, yeah, it seems that way. It's Ubuntu and related stuff ideas. So it's the idea is that a member of the public, a user or a potential user of Ubuntu, can go to the Brainstorm website and search for an existing idea that they may already have, like they may want something improved in some way. Say, for example, they might want the webcam support improved in Ubuntu in some particular way. Mm-hmm. So they might search for their webcam and find that nobody else has suggested this. And then they type a little bit of spiel about what they want. That goes into a queue with lots of others. And other members of the public can go to the website and rate it up or down. There's little green and red arrows that they can vote it up or down, a bit like Dig.
Okay.
Yeah, it's filling up with quite a lot of these ideas. There's about three or 4,000 ideas in there at the moment. There are a lot of duplicates, and we're trying to clear those up. I was recruited to be a moderator to help them clear out the duplicates.
Okay. So anybody can go along. You don't have to be involved in Ubuntu. You don't have to have an Ubuntu login to submit ideas?
No. You get if you're a part of the testing team, you'll probably have a login to the QA tracker. But for everyone else, you can just sign into the site at brainstorm.ubuntu.com, register and start voting things up and down. And start registering your own ideas as well.
Okay, so what do we think about this idea?
It's not too much. It's not just too much. You say you've got 3,000 suggestions on there.
Yeah.
I mean, are they going to be seriously looked at?
Well, the plan is that at the next developer summit, which is in Prague in May, I think it is.
Yeah.
At the developer summit, they're going to go through some of the probably the highest rated ones over all time and the highest rated ones that month and so on, and pick out some of these ideas and see if they have legs, as it were.
Should the guys be focusing on these new features that would be great when there are, you look at Launchpad, there are so many bugs?
Yes, good point. But some of the ideas are actually, please pay attention to this bug. You know, it's kind of like a petition in a way to say, please draw attention to this thing. And if you get lots of people rating it up, there's an argument that, quite a lot of people really do get impacted by that bug. So perhaps we should pay more attention to that. Yeah. And others are conceptual ideas and others are, difficult to categorize, but some of them are quite hard to achieve. There's conceptual ideas like make Ubuntu better as an idea, or
brilliant. Vote down,
make it more like Windows, or make it more like OS X. And some of those are very hard. You can't just say, okay, I'll work on that, making it better than OS X or like Windows. And some people would argue against it anyway and say, I wish it wasn't like that. And so some of them are hard to achieve.
Can people not make feature requests through Launchpad?
There is a system called Blueprints in Launchpad, right, where you can write a specification, and that's the recommended way to do it. And in fact, building up to the Ubuntu Developer Summit, it's a good idea to start now registering Blueprints in Launchpad and requesting that they get discussed at UDS.
But the thing I find really good about Brainstorm is that some things which you wouldn't consider a bug, you wouldn't consider a feature request, a blueprint. One I'm just looking at now whilst I'm talking is the do not install support for Palm OS devices by default. Now, to me, that's a valid point. I don't own a Palm OS device. Why would I want support for it? But I wouldn't be able to consider that a bug, and I wouldn't be able to consider that really a feature request. So this Brainstorm is actually a really good release for them little niggles that you wouldn't be able to put somewhere else.
Yeah,
and it also, it's some people find it difficult filing bugs, reporting bugs, whereas the free thought way of just brain dumping what you think straight onto a page in a website is easier for a lot of people. I mean, you can see the popularity of forums. You look at how popular the Ubuntu forums are compared with mailing lists and, you know, IRC and other methods. There clearly is a number of people who benefit from feeling that they can release, you know, their ideas in that
It's
way.
Easy to go onto a website, click up or down. You've not got a huge commitment to get in there.
It's actually quite good fun. It's quite good fun to sit there and scroll through, you know, what's... There was a bit of a problem when it first started, in that the day it launched, there were two ideas on the site that were created by the people who created the site. And then the URL got passed around, and very quickly it ballooned, and it went from two ideas to 10 to 100 in a short space of time. And those 10 or 100 were on the front page, and because they were the first ones you saw, and the only ones you saw if you first visited the site, people started rating those up because they sounded like a good idea. And I'm actually guilty of creating one of the very early ones, and it shows up as most popular on the site, not because it's really popular, but because it was one of the first ones to be created, and it's the one that lots of people have seen, which is a bit of a shame. So they've tweaked the algorithm, and it doesn't show you all-time
great. It shows the most popular ones from today by default, does it?
Something like that. I think it shows most popular ideas this week or most popular today, yeah.
So how many plus ratings has the top one got?
What, today? Week?
Yeah.
100 or so.
Okay.
And then...
So a fair number of people must be visiting and clicking.
Yeah, I mean, it, in one day it was on the front page of Dig, front page of Slashdot, and the front page of Wired. And the server kind of collapsed in a bit of a heap. But the Canonical system admins who host, or Canonical hosts and the system admins look after it, moved it to another server, I believe, which seems to be coping pretty well now.
Okay, and what are the top three ideas, say?
And the top three ideas of all time is fix, suspend, and hibernate. I mean, I don't know anyone who uses laptops here will often find that they break.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perennial problem, and that's... I mean, it's
fair. It needs a lot of focus, really, doesn't it?
It's fair to argue. And I mean, if you were to talk to someone like Matthew Garrett about that, I'm sure he'd go off in a rage about, you know, how difficult it is to just say, let's fix that, because there are so many problems.
Yeah, but I mean, okay. I mean, I've got an IBM laptop here. I pressed hibernate, put it in my bag, and thought it would be switched off. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. I mean, I would have thought this works in Windows. So there must be some sort of stand out there, because there's no specific drivers shipped with that. So
there are.
Are there?
Yeah. That's the problem. Having heard Matthew talk about this, essentially every single laptop does it a slightly different way, and every single manufacturer puts different software on your Windows install
to make it work.
Yeah, and that's actually bundled on the Windows disk, is it?
I don't know if it's on the Windows. It'll be on the manufacturer's utilities, on the pre-installed image. Yeah.
I think I recall very recently Matthew Garrett giving a talk. For those who don't know, Matthew Garrett is a member of the Ubuntu community, and he's very knowledgeable about suspend and resume and ACPI and those kind of related issues. And I remember hearing a talk, actually watching a video, so I know it was him saying it, that someone asked the questions, what should I do if I want suspend and resume? And the answer was, if you want reliable suspend and resume, don't use Linux, because it doesn't work reliably. So I can see why people have voted that the number one thing on Brainstorm.
Okay, what's the next one?
The next one is actually one by our co-presenter here, Alan Pope.
Oh.
This is the one that sneaked in at the top because I...
Provide a simple graphical interface to manage any type of network connection.
Okay, so that would be including VPNs, everything. Mobile connections.
Everything. Because if you look at, like, Network Manager can do wireless, it can do wired networks, and it can do VPN, and I believe it can do dial-up as well.
Yeah.
And with a bit of monkeying around, you could probably get it to do 3G and I don't know if you can, but there's also the connection over Bluetooth to a mobile phone. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's all kinds of different ways of connecting to the internet or connecting to a network. And it would be lovely if there was just a one thing. Like, you know, I hate to say it, but compared with Windows, where there is network places, okay, underneath all of that, there's loads of drivers and applets and rubbish. Mm. But there's one place you go to do dial-up networking and maybe not Bluetooth, but most of it is in one place. Yeah. And I think we need a make my network work button kind of thing.
Does it bug anyone else? You can't press refresh to actually rescan the wireless networks in the area. You have to wait so long. In fact, sometimes it's quicker just to press reboot and actually have an
if you have a fast machine, yeah.
Yeah,
it might be quicker to reboot.
But it does take an age for it to refresh. I mean, if you...
Or you can kill network manager and start it
doesn't
again.
Work.
Really?
If you kill the GUI, the back end's still running.
No, I meant kill.
Kill the whole thing.
Sudo, capital N, network, capital M, manager.
I'm
stop,
pretty sure...
And then start it.
Oh, yeah, I just did kill all NM applet and then...
No, that's just the app. Front you end. Need to kill the network manager process. Yeah. Capital N, capital M.
There's a little bit on the back end that actually does the scanning. Although I can't say I've had that particular problem. It doesn't seem to pick them up quite quickly for me.
Or I just go and have a cup of tea and wait until the wireless network
picks exactly.
up.
Reboot. I mean,
well, yeah, you could do that.
Ubuntu helping tea drinkers everywhere. And the third one?
Power management. Ubuntu needs to go green. PowerTop, less watts, and other tools have finally hit the Linux scene.
Sorry, it's just a knee-jerk reaction when someone says less watts, it's fewer watts.
Well, okay, sorry, I thought I misread it then. Now I've completely lost my place. Thank you, Alan.
That's all right.
So it's all about improving the power management.
Yeah, basically, it's what green hippies want worldwide. They want less power coming out of Linux.
Well, it sounds good with the increasing electricity costs. I wouldn't mind some of that myself.
I saw a funky fan that attaches onto the heatsink of a CPU in a computer recently, and it's driven by some kind of convection motor, and so the heat generated by the north bridge or the CPU or something causes this little motor to spin and causes the fan to go around and blow air, so you don't need electricity. And it seemed kind of like a good idea, and then when you think, well, hang on a minute, that's a little 5-volt fan that draws next to no current. What about the CPU underneath it that's drawing, like, 50 watts?
But look at it this way. You could actually use that power you've generated to run all the LEDs inside your case.
Ah, well, there
and
you
have
go.
A side panel. There
yeah,
you go.
No side panel, have all the lights. And
yeah.
Your bling, bling desktop, yeah.
Okay, I think that's brainstorm then.
I think we've covered that, yeah. So you guys went to Fosdem?
Yep, a couple of weekends ago, Dave and I went off with a group from Hampshire, Lug mostly, and yeah, it's a good time.
What's Fosdem then?
Fosdem is the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting.
Developers?
Developers, yeah, primarily developers, although increasingly they talk about some of the sort of related usability and accessibility and things.
Well, I wouldn't say it was just for developers either. No. It's called Fosdem. I mean, a lot of the presentations were... This is cool features that are coming. This is what's out there. So a lot of things, it wasn't saying you can help us develop by doing this and, you know, this is what we need. It was just saying, hey, guys, this is what we've got. What do you think? You know.
Yeah, so, certainly some of the bigger talks as well. But one of the unique things is, and we talk a little bit about this in the package, that there are developer rooms where lots of different projects will have either a stream of talks or they will have developers talking to each other deciding how to go forward on a particular project. So in the bigger rooms, yes, it's very much here's our project and doing a presentation to a couple of thousand geeks, whereas in the smaller rooms it is a little bit more hardcore, if you like. You know, there's coders and they're talking about some of the software design choices.
So when is it, where is it, and how often is it run?
It's every year. It has been for about 8 years. It's usually the last weekend in February, and it's been in the Université Libre de Bruxelles in Brussels, as far as I'm aware, ever since it started.
And you did some recording interviews while you were there?
Yeah. We took along our little recorder, and we spoke to a few people, not people who are necessarily directly involved in Ubuntu, but people who we think that listeners to the podcast might be interested in.
Okay, should we have a listen to that?
Yep. So we're here on the train to Fosdem, Eurostar. We've just come out of the tunnel. We're in France right now, and I'm here with Dave and Adrian. Now, I've been to Fosdem. This is my third one, I think. But, Dave, this is your first time, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
So, as a Fosdem virgin, what are your hopes for the weekend?
I must say, looking at this year's schedule compared to last year's, there's a lot more interesting talks. I don't really know where to start. There's so many clashing.
So, Adrian, what advice would you have for Dave as a first-time Fosdem goer? You've been here for 2 or 3 years as well, is that right?
Yes, this will be the third Fosdem trip. only for sandwiches. They get a bit busier. It's a mad rush.
What about sort of handling the talks? How do you choose what to go to?
A dartboard is a traditional way to choose, or a roulette wheel. I've eliminated the ones I'm not interested in, and so that leaves me a few left.
It is quite tricky because there's sort of 10 consecutive tracks at least of speakers and of talks, and they go from the gigantic through to the developer rooms where you might have sort of 20 people in. And you can't always tell in advance whether a talk's going to be given well or given poorly. Sometimes you end up sort of stuck in a room with a talk that turns out to be not exactly what you were thinking it was on in the first place, and the speaker's between you and the door. And there's not much you can do to get out of it other than sort of smile sweetly and try not to look too conspicuous when you leave.
I would say it's useful to early on in the talk figure out if you want to stay or not, in particular what level it's aimed at, whether it's an overview introductory talk or an advanced talk, which generally you're interested in one or the other, but not. And if it's the wrong sort, leave early.
And so some of the bigger talks tend to be less in-depth and less technical. So the ones in the larger auditoria is often more of an overview.
So what you're telling me is there's some in-depth talks and there's some easy talks.
Yeah, the technical complexity is inversely proportional to the size of the room.
Hi, it's Dave here, and I'm just joining Andrew Woffer from the Bongo Project. He's the lead developer. Do you just want to say hello?
Hi. Just a quick point. I'm not actually the lead developer. I'm core contributor, My lead developer would be slightly miffed with me if I didn't say so. Basically, Bongo's a lightweight email and calendaring solution. It's a nice small footprint memory-wise. There's no Java stack behind it, so don't have Tomcat or anything like that. Completely open source, GPL v2 licensed, standards compliant, providing IMAP, POP3, email, and SMTP, as well as a CalDAV calendar client. So hopefully users of any desktop, any OS, should be able to interface with us quite happily and quite pleasantly if they want to use a fat client or use a lovely browser.
Now it's got a little bit of a history behind it, because it came originally from a closed source product, didn't it, from Novell?
Yes, that's correct. Our roots trace back many, many years, possibly around 20 years, with Novell NIMS and subsequently Novell Netmail. Novell then, about 3-4 years ago, open sourced chunks of Netmail into the Hoola project. And for commercial reasons, they then subsequently had to sell off the Hoola project to one of their partners. Just before that happened, we thought, well, we like what we've got here, we'll continue it on, and created the Bongo project.
Well, one thing that particularly interests me, when the Hoola project come to an end, how did your project actually get off the ground? How did you meet? How did you actually get the project started?
The bulk of the guys actually worked on Hoola, as the project was, and over the last few months of the Hoola project, Novell guys just weren't available for whatever reason, there were discussions both on IRC, on mailing lists, and offline about the progress of things, how to keep things going, and there were several people that were championing forking and, you know, let's just do it our own way kind of thing, and we didn't want to just do it nonchalantly and go, right, well, sodgy Novell, thank you very much, we're going with the code sort of thing, because we wanted to keep things amicable and whatnot. And, you know, we held a debate effectively and a vote, and the consensus was indeed to fork. So we tried to do it as politically polite, I think, as we could. And Novell, in all fairness, were quite happy with that. They're quite pleasant and pleased to see that we were continuing it as a completely open source project and, you know, community based.
And you've got quite a wide range of distros you produce packages for as well, I saw in your lightning talk yesterday.
A lot of the RPM based distros are supported thanks to OpenSUSE's build service. We support packages for OpenSUSE 10, 5.0 right the way through to the Enterprise edition. We support Fedora 6 to 8, Red Hat Enterprise 5, CentOS 5. We've got Debian packages for Etch out there. Bongo is in Debian Experimental, and hopefully it will be in Fedora 9 as well as a from their own repositories. We aim to provide Ubuntu packages as well shortly. Unfortunately, I'm not very good with Debian based packages, and those that are quite busy at the moment, so it is coming in the short term.
You're looking for developers, I assume.
Yes, developer help would be great, but also testers, just anyone that wants to try it out, file a bug report, jump on IRC, the forums, mailing lists, say that I've got a problem, whatever else, can you help? We'll do our best to help. Could be in, a new item that we've not encountered because we don't use it in a certain way or whatever else. That would be great. If you're using it with a specific mail client or calendar client, whatever else, let us know how you get on. All feedback is welcome. But some more fingers on the keyboards would be great.
And it's a mixture of programming language, isn't it? There's C, there's Python, there's JavaScript. Presumably you don't need to be an expert in everything to get involved and help out.
No, not at all. And if you want to learn programming in any of those particular languages, I'm sure we've got a million and one tasks that a beginner could help out with. There's lots of jobs that need doing. Some are complex, some are quite lightweight. So yeah.
In regards to the interface, you said there was a new version. Your interface is called Dragonfly, isn't it?
Yeah, currently it's called Dragonfly. Yeah.
Yeah. What new features will the new interface bring?
Apart from nice new look, we're hoping to be able to keep the code base a lot more maintainable, from a developer point of view, but also potentially make it modular and pluggable. So if you've got a new feature that you'd like to have included, then you should be able to add that in without too much hassle.
And where can people find out more? The website?
It's bongo-project.org, and there are links there to our forums, our planet, RC channel. It's #bongo on oftc.net.
Lovely.
I'm going to say thank you for your time.
Yep. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
Hi, we're here with Becky Hogg from the Open Rights Group. Hi, Becky.
Hi.
What is the Open Rights Group?
Okay, so the Open Rights Group is a grassroots digital rights organisation. So just to translate that a little bit, what that means is we speak out every time consumer rights, civil rights or human rights are affected by either the poor regulation or the poor implementation of the networked digital technology. So we're talking about issues like privacy, data protection, data retention, copyright, intellectual property, software patents, electronic voting. These are all issues where we've been active on in the last 2.5 years. We were founded in 2005, and we're sort of special because we exist because 1,000 people thought we should in 2005. 1,000 individuals said that they would fund us. £5 a month each. So we're a press clearinghouse. We talk to ministers. We also talk to people who are concerned about their digital rights and help let them show them what they can do to assert those rights.
So there's quite a lot in common with the free software community, although it's not something that's inherently tied to it.
That's right. I think without the free software community, digital rights issues wouldn't be as high profile as they are. We're here in Fosdem, and this is the first time I've been to Fosdem, and I've just met so many engaged individuals from all over Europe. I heard a Danish group say today that privacy and freedom are the killer app of free software, and I think that's right.
So you're a UK-based group, mm-hmm. but also you deal a lot with Europe and...
Well, this is really my first sortie into European legislation right now. Back in 2006, the Open Rights Group ran a campaign against the extension of copyright term on sound recordings. And we managed to, with the help of a lot of other groups and think tanks, persuade the government what, free software people will know all along, which is that copyright doesn't work like that. You don't extend term retrospectively. That's not what it's for. It's about incentivizing people to create work, and Elvis Presley ain't going to record another track in 1958 if we extend term now. So we managed to, as I say, with the help of lots of other groups, win that argument in the UK. And last week, the European Commission announced that they wanted to look into this issue and propose legislation to extend term, at which point I booked a train to Brussels. FOSDEM was going on. I thought, I'm going to come down to Brussels, see what's happening, and organise a campaign to let the European Commission know what we let the UK know in 2006. So in collaboration with the Electronic Frontier Foundations based here in Europe and also the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco, we've developed a website that we're going to launch sometime in the middle of next week, but that I'm soft launching here at FOSDEM this weekend. It's called soundcopyright.eu, and what it asks is it asks the European Commission, the Parliament and the Council of Ministers, the whole EU shebang, to keep copyright policy sound. So not just on sound recordings, but on all copyright policies, to make sure that policies are made on evidence, that all stakeholders' views are taken into account, not just the recording industry, who are desperate to keep hold of the Beatles back catalogue and rent seek on that sort of minority of sound recordings that are still making money now. So I'm getting people, I'm talking to people here, I'm practicing my schoolgirl French, talking to French activists, I'm talking to some very patient German activists in English, and asking them to sort of take a look at the website, sign the petition, and get their networks involved in this. Because this is, you know, we've won the debate in the UK, but digital rights organisations across Europe care about these issues, and we want to work in a kind of distributed but collective fashion to raise awareness about this over the coming months as the Commission proposal goes through the process.
So the big counter-argument is the Cliff Richard argument. You know, these old singers who lived for so long that they made recordings when they were 18 that are now coming out of copyright, and it's their pension. I mean, Sir Paul McCartney is going to be needing a few extra quid in the next few years, isn't he?
That's a very good point. And yeah, that is the big argument. And in fact, what the pro-term extension lobby have done is very clever. They're putting forward the performers, the people who hold performance rights in this music first. And so if you made a track in 1958, and if you are still, that track is being played on the radio, if that track is still being used in movies, in advertising, then you're likely to be okay. You're likely to be financially pretty well off. The minority of tracks that are still doing that, they are the ones that are going to get the benefit from this, the people who have been earning money on the records. And that's unlikely to be this poor, starving session musician that we hear about. Because that poor, starving session musician is poor and starving because for the last 50 years, the music that he made in 1958 hasn't been, you know, giving the returns because maybe people don't like it, or maybe it was, you know, too experimental for 1958 and whatever. So that argument is kind of a little bogus. The other thing is, I think it's great that the European Union and governments want to support poor artists. I mean, heaven knows, if you choose to make your life out of art, out of cultural production, then it's not an easy life. It's even harder than, say, being a campaigner. You know, you don't, it's not foie gras and limousines for everybody, right? However, using the copyright system to support those artists, it's the wrong mechanism to use. How about reforming the pension scheme? Most of us, we can contribute to our pensions during our working life. To say that Cliff Richard needs a pension through the copyright system, I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know if you want to talk about the news that came out last week about the ISPs being held criminally responsible.
Sure. So recommendation 39 of the Gowers Review of Intellectual Property was that internet service providers and rights holder groups need to cooperate in order to stop illicit file sharing online. And if they don't, then the government should step in 2008, basically now. So we've seen a couple of proposals come out. We've seen what's called a three strikes proposal. So you have a contract with an internet service provider, and the rights holder finds, you know, a Britney Spears track on a peer-to-peer file-sharing network and sees the IP address, grabs a few IP addresses about the people who uploaded that track, finds out who's assigned that IP address, writes to the ISP who's assigned that IP address and says, look, this IP address uploaded content. We want you to stop them because they're breaking your terms and conditions, because most people's terms and conditions on their ISP say you can't use this to infringe copyright. So the ISP says, okay, great, looks in their file, says, okay, that's you, all right, I'm going to post you a letter. Or I think it might be an email. It's kind of weird. But it may be a letter, and it says, oi, we've had this information. If you don't stop, we'll switch off your internet connection. And if they find, you know, and they'll do that three times, and if after they send you the third letter, they say, right, that's it, sorry, you're cut off the internet. So I have problems with that. Do you want to maybe?
I was going to say, well, thankfully, there's a lot of ISPs in our country.
That's right. I mean, and if the government really was serious about that, I'd say just cut off people's electricity, because it's much harder to get. That would really stop peer-to-peer file sharing, and because it's much harder to get another electricity provider. Why doesn't the government do that? Because it's disproportionate. Electricity is a universal service, and the government has invested a lot of money in making internet for everybody, in putting its government services online. Businesses put their services online. You know, this is like, we even let criminals receive letters in jail, right? If you cut off someone's internet connection, more and more in the East Society, you're going to be cutting off a lifeline. And doing that, it just appears to us incredibly disproportionate.
And I'd also like to ask on one final note, if people like what you're doing, how can they help?
Yes, thank you very much. God, I'm such a bad salesperson. So I remember, if you remember rightly, I said the Open Rights Group is funded by individual UK citizens. If you're not funding us, please do. The website is openrightsgroup.org/support. You can find out how to give us your fiver a month. You can volunteer for us. You can join. There's a volunteer. We have a wiki, openrightsgroup.org/org wiki. Go there. There's a volunteer section. Find out how to join in. You can join in even if you're not in London. Also, join the discuss list. Come and tell us about your ideas, about your rights. There's a way to join the discuss list on the front page of our website, which again is openrightsgroup.org. Thanks so much for letting me speak to you today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye. Hi, it's Dave Walker here from the Ubuntu UK Loco, and I'm here with Jan Kleis from the Ubuntu Belgium Loco. He's the point of contact, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his Loco.
We have a booth here. There have been a lot of people who are interested in Ubuntu. We have also sold a bit of posters. The Freedom poster, the well-known poster in Dutch, and we helped a couple of people who had problems wireless, and many people talking. We have been talking with people from Canonical who were here also.
It's been a busy weekend. Lots of people come by.
It's from Friday night beer event. It was 3:30 when I left.
So how long has the Loco been running in Belgium?
Exactly 2 years, because we started 2 years ago at Vosden.
Cool. And is it a big team?
But it's big. But we have people who have a core group, and then if we do local activities in cities or around the provinces, over everywhere, we have people that we can ask to come there to help. Like, we do a lot of fairs, computer fairs, sales fair, where they second-hand computers and CDRs and cheap stuff.
we have similar sort of fairs.
Yeah, we go to such fairs where we also talk to normal people about Ubuntu. And we can get people from who live not far away from there to help us. I think the core group is maybe 20, maximum 30 people.
One of the things that's just occurred to me is that we have tables for things like OpenSUSE and Fedora, but they also have tracks. They have rooms where the speakers are always talking about the dev rooms. Yeah. There isn't any such thing for Ubuntu. I wonder if that's something that would be of interest in future years.
Well, we could try to do something like that. We would have to talk to the Ubuntu developers first if they are interested. But no, most of the Ubuntu developers are in the Debian dev room, the GNOME dev room, the KDE dev room. I know a lot of the people who organize FOSDEM are also in the local team of Ubuntu. And I know from them there are already not enough dev rooms. So if we would want a dev room, we would have to share with someone.
I heard you had some quite large meets as release parties for Gutsy.
I don't know how many there were in the largest release party, because it wasn't there. We had like, I don't know, 50 people where I went, which is actually a sort of a luck, but a luck that tries to go to the people who are just beginning with Linux. So most of the people use Ubuntu, which is, there are some others who use other distros, but it's a Linux bubble, a Linux chat. where we also did a small release party. There was one in Brussels also, I think, and one in Liège, I think. They are cooperating for the one in the largest one in Belgium, which we'll know for Hardy will be the only one. They cooperate with the Dutch one for some like speakers, getting speakers and just.
So it's not just beer. There's speakers and talks and things.
This year there were 4 speakers, I think, but otherwise there will be some people will get help. There will just be some fun, of course, drinks and.
That's really good stuff.
Yeah, well, I must say thank you very much for your time, and it sounds like your loco is doing really well.
Yeah,
so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the interview.
Coming up in April, there's an event in
Swindon. Yeah.
At the, where is it?
Museum of Computing in the city, 26th of April.
And what is it? What's the event?
It's an Ubuntu demo day.
Oh, cool. What's the plan? What are they doing?
I think the plan is just to get people to see Ubuntu. Lots of advertising going on in the town, in the city, local press. There was an ad in Linux format this month.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Which is good. Really just sort of making the community aware of Ubuntu. I think they're planning to have a big hall filled with monitors, screencasts running, which obviously you know about, Al. Several tables.
I'm aware of their work.
Yeah. Covering all aspects, everything from the absolute beginner. So you don't feel that it's Linux, I wouldn't possibly know where to start.
It's supposed to be family oriented, isn't it, in some way?
Yeah, the organizer, one of the organizers, Dan's gone out of a way to make sure that people can bring their families and leave dad to nerd out whilst they go and do things in and around the town. So I think she's put a lot of effort into actually getting it ready.
Wow. So who has actually been to this Museum of Computing then?
I haven't.
No.
I've heard of it.
Thought about going, it's all about my way, but...
It's about an hour from my place, but...
So what is it? Is it, as you would expect, lots of glass boxes with old computers in or something?
Yeah, everything. Loads and loads of old stuff. Really old stuff.
You really can nerd out.
Massively.
Cool.
And so who's organising that? Is it Ubuntu UK based?
It's
Diane. The Museum of Computing in Swindon.
They're actually doing the organising?
Yep.
Oh, cool. That's brilliant.
Yeah. They've asked for help on the Ubuntu UK loco mailing list. They've asked for help, and I know a few people have volunteered to go along and help out.
Excellent.
Hopefully some of the local lugs as well will pitch in. There's a couple of groups in and around. There's obviously the Wiltshire Lug. And there's the Wiltshire Computer User Group.
Really?
Going to be there as well.
All right.
Yeah.
So when's that again?
It's on Saturday the 26th of April, and it goes from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Museum of Computing in Swindon.
And is there a website?
There is. It's www.museum-of-computing.org.uk.
Marvellous. Thank you very much, Dave.
Awesome. If you've got any feedback for us, then we'd love to hear it. I'll give you the details in just a sec. We'd also be interested in getting recorded material. If you've got tips or reviews or maybe a rant, you can get it down as short as possible, no more than a few minutes, and let us have a copy of it. Our email address is podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. Or you can come into our IRC channel, which is on the Freenode IRC network, and it's #ubuntu-uk.
Yeah, that sounds good. It'd be great to find out how people are using Ubuntu, what they think of it. If you want to record that on your system and send it into us, that would be great.
Or even just by email would be fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, if audio is a bit too new media, then feel free to just send us plain text emails, and we'll maybe read them out on the show or answer them on the show.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's worth pointing out that we do actually make this whole podcast using Ubuntu. The website is hosted on Ubuntu. The graphics for the website were created in Inkscape on Ubuntu.
By Dave Murphy. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, God. Yeah, we haven't mentioned his name yet.
Ooh,
yeah.
Name Dave dropping.
Oh, name dropping. On IRC. Thank you very much for your hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love the new logo. It's really good. Well, I say new logo. We never had one previously, did we? Because we didn't
exist. There were previous revisions.
Yeah, the earlier revisions. You don't want to see those.
But no, also, he turned it around in, what, 3 days or so, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really... Yeah.
Hard work, much appreciated.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Yeah, so everything's done in Ubuntu. We're happy about that. It's hosted on Ubuntu as well.
Yeah.
And hosted for free. We got a free virtual server from Bitfolk.
Ah, yes. Thank you, Bitfolk.
Thank you. So the next episode, when is that?
Well, we're hoping it's going to be in a couple of weeks' time, but we shall see.
Yeah, if we get loads of feedback to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org saying,
don't bother.
Don't make any more of these.
Thanks for your time.
Close the door.
Yeah, so it was the worst half hour of my life. And if we got lots of feedback and suggestions, then we'll be able to put a show together quite quickly. But keep watching the RSS feed, check the website. And,
the website is?
The website is podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And the email address, which Alan's already mentioned, but send your tips, suggestions, and any feedback at all to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
Links for everything discussed on the show are, of course, available on our website.
So that about wraps it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. See you next time.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.